Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Film Haven Reviews. I am your host Sawyer as always, and today we are finally saying goodbye to the home invasion thriller theme. It's our last one, and with that means that I have my special co-host with me, Allie.
Hi.
And we are vexed by this movie. We'll get into it, but the movie is called When a Stranger Calls. Might sound familiar because it is kind of famous. They did a remake in 2006. More on that later because we did watch it in preparation for this. And so I can't wait to get into this because I think I honestly probably have more to say. I don't know if more to say, but I have more opinions on this movie than I do the other ones. There's not too much to talk about, but at the same time, I definitely, like, whereas the other ones I was maybe a little bit more lukewarm on, like Panic Room was just like, yeah, it was a good movie. And it was done well. And then, you know, Silent House was a little boring, but interesting. This movie is, like, annoying because it has all this precedence in it. And it's a very influential film, especially because of the opening sequence. And yet the film as a whole was a bit of a letdown. So with that, let's get into the synopsis. Also, a caveat, of course, we do have, because Allie is always demanding it, we have a cat inside the studio.
She's currently climbing on my shoulder and her tail is hitting the mic, so.
So just be aware of that. Anyway, so the synopsis. The intro of this movie is pretty much, you know, this is hard to talk about because even within, like we watched it on Tubi, it says it's on HBO Max, but I swear we couldn't find it. It was a whole thing just trying to find the movie. But we watched it on Tubi, and the description in the bio gave away the entire intro. You remember that?
Sure did. Yeah, I do remember that.
And Allie was so mad because, you know, the intro is very tense. The intro almost feels like a one of those old, like, ghost stories or, like, those old, like, urban legends of, like, the man with the hook while the couple is out on Lover's Lane, you know?
Yeah.
So a part of that is having the hook at the end, like the kind of like, ooh, bum, 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 like a bit of a twist. And there definitely is one, but it's ruined if you read any of the descriptions. And honestly, I'm just going to say out of the gate that I wouldn't recommend watching this movie. Would you?
No, I wouldn't recommend watching this one, but I would recommend watching the remake.
Yes, the remake is great. And this doesn't ruin the remake when we tell you about the intro. So honestly, we're just going to start talking about spoilers from the beginning because I don't recommend this. So if you really sounds good, if you really are just like a stickler for watching movies that are really have a lot of precedence or are very influential and you don't want it ruined for you, then, you know, maybe wait until you see it to listen to this. But honestly, I don't recommend it. I would, yeah, like Allie was saying, I'd recommend over this seeing the remake because it's basically the same concept but better. And we'll get into that later. So anyway, the intro, the whole thing is there is a babysitter played by Carol Kane, which she has been in a lot of stuff since then. The thing I always think of her as is she was the granny in Adam's Family. She has a very distinct voice. And in this one, it is no difference. I remember she's like on the phone and she's like, Bobby!
Yeah, it reminds me. She reminds me a little bit of the wife from The Shining.
Oh, yeah. Sherry Duvall.
Yeah.
Shelley Duvall. That's right. Yeah. So she's kind of weird. Also, the audio was really strange.
It was really bad audio.
Like it sounded like they kind of overdubbed it. Like they recorded it in studio or something. Like we literally needed. It was American English. Everyone was like technically speaking good English and stuff. But the audio quality and the dialogue was so bad that we needed subtitles. I mean, we needed subtitles anyway. But we were originally watching it on Peacock, which does not have subtitles, weirdly enough. And we literally had to find it somewhere else because it just like we could not understand what they're saying. But anyway, so there's this babysitter, Carol Kane, playing Jill Johnson. And she is babysitting for these two young children. The children are already upstairs asleep in their bed. And it's like this upper middle class family. The dad's a doctor and they're going out on like a date night. And she's basically just supposed to like sit in the living room, do her homework, and just hang out until they get back. It's going to be late, but it's really chill babysitting. She doesn't even have to really take care of the kids because they're already asleep.
Yeah, and the mom also is like, don't wake them up because they are getting over a cold. So the babysitter is literally just supposed to be there in case well, the worst case scenario, which happens. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, so exactly. It's like the easiest job ever. And of course she immediately starts, she calls her friend and they're like fretting over Bobby. And then, it's a whole thing where Bobby is going in between dating her friend and her. It's like drama. And eventually she starts getting these calls, and of course it starts off. I mean, this will sound very familiar as it's kind of become a trope over the years, but basically you got the caller who calls in and just like breathes on the phone at first, and you're like, and then makes her hang up, and then calls again, and he's like, he just won't stop calling. And then eventually he says this really creepy line, which is, "Have you checked the children?" And she like totally freaks out. She calls the cops, and there's a really nice cop on the phone, and he's basically like, "Look, has he done anything? Has he gotten inside? Is he menacing you other than just calling you?" And she's like, "No." He's like, "You know, we're literally busy tonight, and I'm sorry, but we just can't really do much unless he's actually threatening you and doing something physically to harm you." And so he continues to call and menace her, and she freaks out and keeps calling the cop. And eventually the cop starts working with her, and he says, "Okay, well, maybe I can trace the call. And if I trace the call, we can figure out where this guy is and we'll nail him." And she's like, "Okay," but she has to get him on the phone for 60 seconds. So now she's got to try to get him on the phone for longer. And eventually she does, and they trace the call. And what do they find out?
That he's in the house with them the whole time. And am I allowed to say this?
Yo, yeah, you can say
he
it.
Killed the kids.
Bomb, bomb, bomb.
Kids are dead.
So yeah, it starts out and you just have this like kind of now famous, I would say, like kind of line of being like, "He's in the house. We traced the call. He's in the house. You got to get out of there." And then, you know, I will say, admittedly, the strings and the score is really good right here, where they really, that high pitch like strings that they've been kind of throwing out now are going in full blast. The, you know, it's that old style, you know, it's still the 70s, like score is in there really laying the suspense on. And she's trying to get out of the house, but the door's locked and she's freaking out. And she, I mean, totally, you know, screw the kid, she's out. And as soon as she opens the door, boom, the detective's right in her face, and they're like, they you know, she's hysterical, and they're helping her, and they go upstairs and they find out that he's killed the kids. And which is really dark, honestly.
Yeah, that was not expected for me.
No, not at
it's
all.
Never expect. It's always a shock in the movie when like a kid dies in like a bad way.
Yeah,
though.
I mean, they don't show the kid, of course, but it is like, it's really, you know, it's shocking and it's suggestive.
They bring the little, it's like a little body bag, yeah, which I'm like, ew, out. I did not like.
Yeah, so, but yeah, really dark. I mean, but that's like the first like 20 minutes of the movie. It's the intro. And it's a very famous intro because it's very, if that sounded familiar, it's probably because it reminds you a lot of like, say, the intro in Scream, which is obviously now a much more iconic film, ironically, because the whole point of Scream is to make callbacks to old movies. But and truly, if you don't like, it's one of those things. So the movie is so influential. And it's not the first home invasion thriller by any means. Obviously, just 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Panic Room being based on a movie with Audrey Hepburn from like the 50s or 60s. So home invasion thrillers are not, you know, it's not a new thing in 1979. But it is maybe the beginning of the modern home invasion thriller. It's a lot closer to movies like we talked about Hush or other movies where... the, you know, is the killer in the house or being harassed by a stranger, like that kind of thing. A perfect movie for the 2000s, which I think is why the remake was really good. But the point is that sometimes, like when we talked about this with Godzilla, like you have these movies that kind of started things, and a lot of times, you know, it's kind of up in the air whether they hold up or not. And this movie definitely is the opposite of Godzilla. It does not hold up. Which is unfortunate because the intro is actually very well done, despite the audio that's kind of bad on the actual dialogue. But the problem is that the next section of the movie is so Boros Noro.
It's the whole like medium half.
Yeah, like the first and the ending is pretty good, but the ending is ruined by the middle because the ending is kind of anticlimactic compared to the... The ending is basically a rehash of the intro. So the intro gets played out again, but But Jill Johnson is older, and it's happening to her babysitter and her kids, or the stranger attacks her and her husband, and there's like a big fight. But it's really quick, and it's over in like 2 seconds, and then that's the end of the movie, which is weird because the middle section of the movie, which is like 45 to 50 minutes long, is the stranger and the detective that's trying to catch the stranger having like a cat and mouse situation in San Francisco or in LA or something. And it's like, what? Like, it just doesn't like have anything to do with the intro or the end. I mean, it has something to do with it, but here's part of the problem is that they identify the killer. The detective finds out his name is Clark Duncan. And then the middle section of the movie is just like it's almost like a true crime, like serial killer kind of movie where they're trying to nab. It's like a psychological profile of Clark Duncan. You're spending so much time with the killer and the stranger. Like, and that's my problem, is that the movie is when a stranger calls, not when Clark Duncan calls. Like, you're not supposed to know who he is. He's supposed to be a stranger.
Yeah, that was really weird to me, too, is how like the whole middle half is just following the killer. And then he's also like too stalking this girl.
Yeah, it's like a whole side
thing. So, and it's like, who is this woman? But we like follow her through half of it. We never really know who she is, but she's just kind of like, and she's not really that important either.
No.
That's what's so weird. And also, he's not like violent with her.
No, he's just
like
weird.
He's just like obsessed with her and just wants to be her friend. Like, he doesn't have any friends and he just wants to be her friend. So then it's just like a total like weird switch around where all of a sudden like he's hiding in the upstairs bedroom of the beginning girl's house. She's like an adult with two kids, but this time it's actually successful in the sense that the kids do survive.
Oh yeah, she does defend the kids.
But it almost seems as though like that the whole purpose is to lead up to that point, and maybe that it's even supposed to be like a surprise that we're coming back to this character.
Right, like you're not supposed to know.
Unfortunately, it was spoiled for me in the description.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I knew that she was coming back. So the whole time I was like, when is she coming back? When is she coming back?
You spend the whole middle section just sitting there waiting because you know what's going to happen.
Right.
So the movie is like sandwiched by two like somewhat engaging parts. And then the middle section is just like, because you know, it has almost nothing to do with both sides. It's just kind of useless. It's just fat. But the problem is that if you were to take it out. So like I said, I wish they would just never show who Clark Duncan was. And I wish it was just like the idea of him coming back, you know, 10 years later when she has kids or something like that is interesting. I think as a plot is interesting and you can do it well. But within this movie, it's like if you were to leave him a stranger, if you were to keep him anonymous and not go into this analyzation of the character, the psychopath Clark Duncan. I mean, it's almost like the movie is two different movies. It's trying to be like the more modern kind of or it's the origins of the new modern type of horror, home invasion thriller, something like Hush or some of the other movies that we've already talked about. But then at the same time, in the middle section, it's kind of a true crime, like serial killer movie. And so while the ending was good, it just wasn't like, it just felt kind of flat to me. So
yeah, I agree. The only part that really stood out to me in the end was when you kind of discover, like, the last fighting sequence starts with the main character from the beginning, the babysitter from the beginning,
Jill,
getting into her bed. She thinks that she's getting into bed with her husband, but it's not her husband. It's the killer.
Right.
And she's like, where is my husband? Where is my kids? And it's like this whole breakdown because she's being like gaslit basically this whole time. Like, she has obviously like PTSD from
this
situation.
Yes, oh, for sure. And she doesn't know that he's out because he's supposed to be put away, but they didn't tell her that he's out and about.
And so it's pretty obvious that like she and her husband don't really go out that much because like she has PTSD about this situation. And so everyone's talking her down and saying it's not a big deal when in reality the killer is in her bed.
I guess that is good, too. Like, what they did in the last 25 minutes to kind of build up that scene again, like the original, was good. Once the actual fight happened, and I totally forgot about that scene in the bed, that was really good, too. So there are, like, flashes of brilliance in the film. it's just that middle section really weighs it down to the point where it's like you have to have it, because the movie, I mean, even with that middle section, the movie is an hour and 37 minutes. So if you took that middle section out, I mean, you wouldn't have a movie. But at the same time, once they actually start fighting, because me and Allie have been watching a lot of these kind of like obsession movies. Like recently we watched like Unlawful Entry with Ray Liotta. And then you had Pacific Heights with Michael Keaton. And that those were great. And then we've watched some of the trashier ones like Obsessed with Beyonce and Idris Elba. And all those movies they're so fun. The characters that one person gets obsessed with another, and then they spend the whole movie kind of terrorizing them. But all those movies by the end, which is interesting because those movies are very much influenced, I would say, by this movie, because it is like it's like supposed to be a stranger or someone obsessed with a person and terrorizing them and menacing them. But in all those movies, including this one, there is always a culmination, a fight scene inside the house, which is always really kind of tense and fun. And they've built up all of the tension over throughout the movie, and the victim and the perpetrator or the stranger or the menacing person gets to actually like have a resolution through a big fight scene. And it's very energetic. And in this one, it just kind of ends like really fast.
Like, yeah, it's really all just like mid.
Yeah. Thank God that the kids live, though.
Yeah, that's a plus.
But yeah, so I guess my big takeaway, I'm going to give this a 5 out of 10, by the way. What would you give it?
I would probably give it. I liked the first half, like the first half of the babysitter, that whole sequence with the phone. That actually, like, I was feeling my heart rate.
Oh yeah, it was actually tense. You could see where that was an influential scene.
I thought the whole middle part was just like not good.
It brought the movie down. I would say like the first bit and the last bit together would probably be a solid 7 out of 10.
I liked the last part. Wish that the ending was a little more
drawn out.
Yeah, a little more drawn out. A little more like somebody's head gets bashed in.
Yeah,
you know. That did not happen. No, so
it was just over before you knew it, and so that 45 minutes of build up to that scene didn't feel as it just wasn't worth it. So it was kind of a waste of our time.
Yeah, I would give it probably a 5 out of 10 as well.
Yeah, just because I mean I totally agree with you that there were parts of it that were great, and then there were unfortunately that especially that middle section just brought it down. So yeah, that's it for home invasion thrillers. You know, this was interesting. I think generally we liked them. I think they were in the 7s in the first two, and then this one was just a letdown. Sometimes, you know, that's like kind of the fun and part of the risk of going back and watching movies that kind of started it all in some ways, or started a whole trend, or had this precedence, is that sometimes they hold up and sometimes they don't. And in this case, I think that you should definitely watch, because we watched the remake. Yeah,
I really enjoyed the remake.
Way better.
I feel like the remake was everything that this movie was not for us. And like, we got the action.
Right,
there
was tons of action.
There was tons of action in it. We got the fight scene that you wanted.
Totally. It was prolonged. It was long. And the stranger was a stranger the whole time. They made a point of not revealing who he was. And also, I think even when we were watching the original When the Stranger Calls, we were kind of saying like, this would be so much better if it all happened like in one night. If the intro was just the whole movie and they prolonged it and kind of drew it out and put some twists and turns in it. And that's literally what they do.
Yeah.
In the new one, and it's very 2006. The acting is still pretty horrid, but at the same time, like, if you like, you know, mid 2000s thriller movies or horror movies, then it's like perfect. It's way better than this film. Definitely give that a try if you're wanting to watch a movie like When a Stranger Calls, want something that's actually good. Watch the remake, and then also just watch Scream, because that intro scene is the same pretty much, except for it's the ghost face and not a stranger. So that's it for this week. And then next week, we are starting a new theme, and I haven't necessarily decided. I have about 3 different themes that I'm kind of swirling around on what I want to do, and I'm not sure what it is yet. So a lot of possibilities for next week. It'll be a mystery for all of us. So thank you so much for being here for this whole theme, Allie. I appreciate it as always. These are always so much fun movies for us to watch, and I always want to hear your opinion on them.
Oh, how sweet.
But anyway, that's it for this week. I hope you guys have a great week, and I will see you next Friday.
Bye.